This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. A North Dakota senator and a Utah senator have introduced a bill in the Senate called the Protect and Serve Act 2018. This bill aims to make it a federal hate crime if someone causes or attempt injury to a law enforcement officer. Joining me to break the logistics of this bill down is Professor of Justice Studies at Florida Gulf Coast University, Pamela C. Thanks for joining me, Pamela.
Well, it's very nice to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Now, before we get into the bill itself, could you clarify what exactly is a hate crime?
Hate crimes are one of those things that may seem like they're a little new, but they're really not. A hate crime is defined in federal statutes. It's an act that is motivated by bias or prejudice. It's something that relates to a person's race, their gender, their religion, their national origin. Those are normally the things that we associate with a hate crime. It is something that a person does, ordinarily associated with an act of violence, that is done against a person simply because of who and what they are. Ordinarily, we look at our Constitution as a source for that. There are equal protection laws and so forth from our 14th Amendment, when what we want to do is protect those who need additional protection because they have been the brunt of certain acts of violence and bias and prejudice. What we're trying to do is eliminate that. And if you are acting in a way that is biased or prejudiced and harmful to another person, and I think that's the key. It's the harm that's involved. We're not saying that you can't think a certain way. What we're saying is you can't act a certain way. And that's, you know, when we talk about a hate crime, that's what we're looking at. What is the action that's based on the thought behind it?
Okay. So with that said, can you explain the details with the Protect and Serve Act of 2018?
Well, yeah, the Protect and Serve Act of 2018 has actually two versions to it. There is the one in the House of Representatives that recently passed, and then another companion bill or a similar bill in the Senate. The Senate bill is the one that actually contains sections that appear to be hate crime defined, so that if you are making some sort of harmful act against a law enforcement officer, you know, that's considered a hate crime under the Senate version of the Protect and Serve Act. What the overall act has done, both Senate and House versions, is to make a federal crime to harm a law enforcement officer while they're doing their jobs. And it creates some penalties, and there are certain things that go along with that, but that, in essence, it's protecting law enforcement.
Aren't there already laws in place to protect law enforcement, though?
Well, sure there are, but they have not gone to this great extent. And some of the ones, for example, there's a federal law. In fact, many of the senators have said, well, why do we need this? Well, there's already a federal law in place. And what that does, it enhances penalties. It doesn't create a new crime. What this Protect and Serve Act does, it creates a new crime that if you harm or kill a police officer, a law enforcement officer, it's a crime in itself. Previously, if you harmed or killed an officer, it merely enhanced penalties. So the defendant, the person who committed the act, would have to be convicted of another crime initially. And then, if there was a law enforcement officer involved, the penalty would be enhanced. It means more years would be added to their sentence. But this makes it a crime by itself. You don't have to prove anything other than this one, what this one crime says. If you caused harm on purpose to a law enforcement officer, you can be found guilty under this law. Do you need another one? Well, it's all in how you look at it, I suppose. When you're looking at statistics, for example, that are showing law enforcement officers have been harmed or killed in their line in the line of duty. You figure in 2017, it was maybe 47,000 that may have been 57,000 officers that might have been hurt hurt or killed in the line of duty. They might have been stabbed or shot or beaten. Might even been run over by a car. So what this is attempting to do is look at those statistics and say, we need to address this and protect our law enforcement officers directly.
You know, I'm thinking of more common things you see of, like, resisting arrest. And then you would have, on top of resisting arrest, but also because you kind of flailed a bit, you may have hit the officer. Now you've attacked an officer, and now you got a brand new thing on your sheet. Okay, so what's the extent? I mean, obviously, if a officer was killed in the line of duty, you know, of course they should have the book thrown at them. But what if somebody pushed the officer?
Okay,
would that
be
considered too?
That depends. My instinct says no. Because you're not doing this directly, you're not purposefully doing this, making this action because the person is a law enforcement officer. You're doing this act because you're being arrested. And I know that's a fine line, but I think that fine line is going to be important when these let's assume that this is adopted and becomes law. That's fine line we're going to have to address whether or not. This was purposeful. I did it because this person was a law enforcement officer. Slightly different than I did it because I was being arrested. I'm protecting myself from an officer. Like, for example, if we're looking at a someone who's being arrested, okay, and he's acting out perhaps, and he's trying to protect himself from being arrested. If he looks at the officer and says, "I hate you, officer," there's evidence right there. Through his statement, that any act he might take against the officer was purposeful as a law enforcement officer. Otherwise, is he just defending himself? Maybe. Then we look at the actions of an officer. Is that officer acting out beyond the scope of his duties? Is he harming that defendant, that person he's arresting, the arrestee? Has he gone beyond his role? Is he committing some kind of police brutality? If that's the case, you know, trying to hide behind the law might be a challenge, and that comes down to proof. In when you're looking at how do you prove these facts on whether an officer was beating someone who was stopped for a traffic offense, or whether the officer was simply trying to control that person. So in an instance of something like that, it could be a challenge.
That would be a big challenge. I mean, most of the time, the law will always fall behind the officer 100% because, you know, they're going to trust the officer. But wouldn't police brutality be able to hide behind this law, like, easy?
Oh, it's possible, yes. It's certainly possible. You know, we like to believe, and I've always been brought up believe that law enforcement is one to be respected. However, that's not the case with everyone, and that's not the case with every area. That not every law enforcement officer is a perfect person. So, you know, are there issues in some departments? There have been, and whether or not that is the perception in that locality is going to have a bearing on the case as well. You know, I don't have any statistics in front of me that talk about specifically the numbers of police incidents of police brutality, but you can look through the media and see countless cases where a police officer has used much too much force than would be necessary in order to arrest someone. Well, if I'm being arrested and a police officer is starting to beat on me, you can bet I will probably want to defend myself. And I think that is a normal occurrence. There may even be others, witnesses who are there who say, "Wait a minute, you're beating on this person. We can't let this happen. We have to protect them." That might intervene. So at that point, is that person who is doing the intervention, is that person who is protecting themselves going to be prosecuted under this law? Well, possibly. Or is that officer going to be able to defend himself by saying, I was merely doing my job? And that, you know, that actually leads us into a separate question that has been also very high in the media in the last year or two, particularly in law enforcement, dealing with body cameras, dash cameras, and recordings of incidents that occur. And you know, we've seen these throughout. With if a law enforcement officer makes one claim and says, this is what happened, and I know what happened, and this is what my report is going to say, that I was only doing my job, and yet a body cam shows, no, that's not the case. No, that was not a gun in that boy's hand. That was a book. Or no, that person was not aiming something at you. He was actually running away. So, you know, these are things that come down to proof and whether or not there is adequate evidence, such as a recording, a body camera, some video camera footage, webcams in an area, security cameras. So, you know, it's not just the word of an officer anymore, where it may have been some 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, now that we have security cameras and the technology that allows us to record these things, the possibilities become a little less likely for an officer to hide behind that. Is it still possible? Sure. Are we trying to find ways to keep that from happening? Sure. And one of the ways that we try to do that, of course, is by hiring more educated police officers. And right now in most local agencies, for example, it's not required that you have a college degree. And that is one of the things that many agencies are trying to change. And I know we find that at Florida Gulf Coast University, where our students are being recruited very heavily for law enforcement positions because they have training in the constitutional procedures that go along with law enforcement. What are the procedures that you must follow under the 14th Amendment? What is equal protection? What do you have to do? How? I think there's one of the things that we teach called verbal judo, for example. How do you get out of a situation without some kind of confrontation of physical violence? What are the alternatives? And we also see that with the number of women that are coming up in the field of law enforcement and criminal justice, where there has been a change in the attitudes of police officers. It's not always that physical approach first. It's a verbal approach. How do we find a way to stem the situation? How do we calm it down first? And in many instances, that has been successful. Some, of course, it has not. There will always be that chance for physical violence, but trying to avoid the physical violence in the first place, and that's done through education, and trying to find a way to make the profession a little bit more responsive to the public and public's needs, and avoiding violence and avoiding bias. And that's going back to the origin when we talked about a hate crime. How do we eliminate or at least avoid bias or prejudice in the execution of duties of a police officer? And what we hope to do with something like this is to say, well, all right, not only is it bias or prejudice on the part of the police department, but it's also bias and prejudice on the part of the perpetrator, the one who is actually committing these offenses. And I know I was kind of a circular discussion of that, but I hope that kind of answered it somewhat.
It did. You know, I was also thinking of an incident where a female officer was being attacked and she was being beaten pretty badly and she wouldn't draw her gun. She was taken to the hospital afterwards and her commanding officer asked her, you know, why didn't you, you could have defended yourself. And she said, well, I didn't want to get the department or her family in trouble for shooting somebody. So she just took the beating. Is that why this kind of law or bill wants to be pushed through?
Well, that can be a motivating factor in why this could be pushed through. certainly those are things that we want to consider, because law enforcement officers are now in an awkward position. How do they defend themselves, and what length do they go to defend themselves? And you know, the instance that you just brought up is one of those circumstances where an officer made a decision that was harmful to themselves because they didn't want to harm their department. And when you're looking at police brutality, you don't want to ever be accused of that. We had an officer here in Florida who was being beaten. He was on the ground beside a car. The person in the car had gotten out and was brutally beating this man, and he didn't pull out a gun. Somebody else, on the other hand, did. Another driver came by with a gun, pulled his gun out, and shot this other person who was beating the police officer. So, I mean, we have to have some means of saying police officers have a special position in society, and that special position deserves to be protected. And if there is a person who is committing an act on a police officer simply because that officer is protecting the rest of the rest of society, then we need to punish that person. This bill very likely would do that. An enhancement already does it. It'll be a difficult discussion, I think, in trying to pass the bill. Will it pass? Good question.
Now, if it does pass, do you think that this will be a door opener for other professions to want to seek something, some kind of similar kind of protection, like, let's say, an accountant or a lawyer?
It's possible. I don't know that it could go that far. I could see it extending to judges, certainly because judges very often are in a position where they are sending someone to prison, for example. They're meeting out justice. They're imposing punishment. So they are the ones that sometimes need some protection. Lawyers, perhaps. Doctors, even. Doctors who have provided services and for whatever reason a person dies anyway, even though the doctor may have done everything they could have done. Emergency medical technicians, the EMTs, firemen, certainly. A tow truck driver that might be in a position to help and is harmed. But questions are going to arise on the constitutionality of protecting someone simply because of their profession. And, you know, first of all, we look at the Constitution to say, why would we protect anyone? You know, what we have here is a statutory basis for protection, not a constitutional basis. And that becomes much more challenging. How do you know what it was that this person, okay, the person accused of harming someone, how do you know what they were thinking? If we're looking at a hate crime based on a person's profession, you're looking at what was the perpetrator thinking. I don't like tow truck drivers, therefore I'm going to kill the tow truck driver. How do you prove that? And, you know, all of a sudden you're starting to penalize someone for their thoughts, not just their actions. I mean, you're going to penalize them for their actions anyway, if they've harmed a tow truck driver, a fireman, a doctor, an accountant. But to tack on something additional simply because of their profession, that seems to be not necessarily as defensible as when you have a law enforcement officer whose duty is to defend the rest of society. They are protecting the laws. They are maintaining order in society. That I think there's a stronger case to protect a police officer than there might be to protect other professions. Extending it to EMTs, firemen, judges, theoretically possible. Generally speaking, those aren't the ones who are suffering as greatly as police officers, though.
Well, Pamela, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
If you'd like to find out more about me, you can visit the Florida Gulf Coast University website, fgcu.edu, or you can go to my own website at pamsea.com, that's P-A-M-S-E-A-Y, travelingprof.com. I'm on Facebook as Commissioner C. Also Twitter at Traveling Prof.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.